Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Back in 2016, outgoing President Barack Obama told those gathered for the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia that what really matters when it comes to elections.
And then there's Donald Trump. Don't boo. Vote.
Trump won the election, but the midterms on November 6 will test his mettle. At a rally in Minnesota last week, he called on his supporters to show up at the polls.
On Tuesday, November 6th, I need your vote. I need your support to stop radical Democrats.
Voters on both sides of the ticket are motivated this time around. Today, we're talking about get out the vote strategies. Joining us is director of the Election Law Center at The Ohio State University Moritz College of Law, Ned Foley. Welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And also OSU political scientist Paul Beck. Welcome back, Paul.
Good to be here, Ann. Thank
Listeners,
you.
We've posted links to online voter registration at WOSU.org/allsides, as well as on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Tomorrow is the last day to register, so don't forget. Paul, what's a typical voter turnout for a midterm election?
Well, in Ohio, it's been around 40% of the people who would be eligible. It doesn't mean they're necessarily registered.
It's not 40% of everybody, but yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's relatively low compared to 60%, more or less, at the presidential in the presidential year. So there's a fall off by about a third. And the question, of course, always is who are the third that are falling off?
Then I read back in time, you know, and turnout used to be 77%, 80% plus. Ned Foley, what's happened over the decades?
Well, a lot of that was the spoil system. People depended on political parties for livelihood, among other things. And the progressive era changed the rules and said that there was going to be merit system for public employment and so forth. So that demobilized participation that's been documented by historians. So that isn't the best reason to turn out. It's because you want a government favor. Turnout should be based on civic engagement and the desire to improve the country.
Have we studied, I mean, in the developed world, I read one ranking that I think was the United States was something like 26 out of 32 in the developed world nations with democracies. Wow, really? That's bad.
And of course, we could be like Australia if we wanted to and have compulsory voting. That wouldn't be the American way. We treasure our freedom too much. But
I didn't know Australia was compulsory.
Yeah.
So beyond that, just getting people energized. And the idea of the midterms is that usually that's 2 years after a president has taken office and been reelected, and it's kind of a vote on their success.
In a way, that's right. There are other factors, obviously, but the trend has been over the years for the president's party to lose seats and lose a percentage of the vote in the midterm elections. And one would expect that to happen again this year. I, by the way, wanted to add on turnout that as you go back in time historically, the figures get hokier, kind of harder to estimate. Part of the reason was that in one-party areas, such as the South or the big cities, there was a lot of a manufactured vote where politicians were stuffing the ballot boxes. And it's kind of hard to know how to factor that out in comparing modern-day turnout levels with those historical levels. And then the other thing is that in the 19th century, voting in the midterm elections was almost as much as voting in the presidential elections. And it's because presidents probably were less important in that era than they have become in the 20th and 21st century.
Your governor, your mayor, that kind of thing was more important.
Yes.
And if I could add one other thought on turnout, it's not just the overall rate, it's the demographic breakdown. I happened to see this morning at least the national statistics of turnout of the 18 to 25 or that sort of younger generation was in the teens in the last midterm, I think. So, and I'm sure Paul has these statistics that older voters tend to turn out at a much higher rate than younger voters. Better educated voters in terms of college graduates tend to turn out more than less educated voters. And so that can really make a difference in the election.
Do registration numbers tell us anything?
You know, sometimes they do, but the thing about registration is you register once And if you vote more or less regularly, it doesn't mean every time, you stay on the rolls. You stay on the rolls even if you move to Florida. So in a way, it's a funny number to deal with. Secretaries of state all over the country try to clean up those rolls through purging voters for non-voting largely. They don't really have good records on who has moved and who has died. And so the purges sometimes are excessive. They're purging people who really are legitimate voters. And that's become a real issue in modern campaigns.
Voter turnout in primaries was higher than usual. A Pew Center analysis of state election returns showed that Democrats were particularly enthusiastic. I suppose that's not necessarily a surprise, but is there evidence that that enthusiasm has persisted? So first of all, why this enthusiasm at the primary level? That's kind of unusual.
Well, part of it's a Trump factor. And on the Democratic side, there's a lot of anti-Trump feeling and enthusiasm, and it propelled people into contests in the primaries. Primary turnout in Ohio usually is around 20%.
Yeah. I mean,
we're talking
it's
about
pathetic.
A thin slice of the electorate. Now, a lot of people who are not registered as Democrats or Republicans are not going to vote in the primaries.
Right.
So these are Democrats and Republicans who are turning out. The fall off is considerable. The energy that goes into any particular election cycle sometimes can manifest itself in higher turnout for one party than the other, and that's what's been happening in at least in 2018.
Can I add one more point about the purging issue? Because it is an issue, and it's a national issue. But in Ohio, there's been litigation on it that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and Ohio's system was actually upheld by a closely divided vote at the court. It was one of those 5-4 decisions. But I think the one thing that Secretary of State Husted said that for this election, no one would suffer because of what had been in litigation. So there's a kind of hold harmless effort. And the most important thing to remember is about provisional ballots, which are the voters' ultimate safety net. I mean, I guess I would say two things. If you're at all afraid that you might be the victim of a purge, in Ohio, we have online voter registration, and you can check your voter registration status online. So it's pretty easy if you have access to a computer, and if you don't have one at home, go to a friend or the library or whatever. You can see your registration status, and if you don't see yourself registered, you can fix that right on online. The other thing is if you go to the polls on election day or participate in early voting, you can vote a provisional ballot, and that at least captures your choice. And if you were the victim of an erroneous purge, they will have to count that ballot because they can't deny someone who was wrongly removed from the registration list. So
what constitutes wrongly? Because if they fall within the category of having not voted for a certain period of time, that's legitimate,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. If it was a valid because Paul is absolutely right. I mean, it is dangerous for the system to have too many deceased voters or too many folks who have moved to Florida because there could be mischief if you have extra names on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal government, in fact, requires regular list maintenance. So there has to be some orderly process to do this. And there's a debate about exactly what that process should be. So, yes, if your name – if you don't vote, if you're inactive for I think it's 6 years, then you get a notice. And if you don't respond to the notice, you can be removed. But, of course – before tomorrow, you can fix that because whether you've been removed or not removed, you can get yourself automatically back on the list for sure if you're a valid voter, regardless of a purge tomorrow. But let's say you don't do that. Let's say you thought you were registered and you were removed. Then if you were removed properly, the vote won't count. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were removed improperly, then the vote should still count.
And I would add that most provisional votes end up being counted. So these are people who are valid voters, even if they've moved residence, showed up at the wrong precinct or whatever. It often happens. I talk about this in my classes, and it often happens to students who are born and raised in, I don't know, Canton, Ohio, move to the Ohio State campus, show up to vote on election day at Ohio State and are not on the list. So they would vote provisionally and their vote probably would end up counting. The other thing to say about this is that I think there are very, very few examples of people who are voting invalidly,
mm-hmm.
Who have
John,
been
Secretary of State John Huston has said that.
Yeah, just we're talking about handfuls of people,
right.
So it's not a big problem. But secretaries of state, I think, don't like messiness. They would like to have registration rolls that are really clean. The example of this I love to give. I used to live in Florida, and I had a neighbor who, at a party in the neighborhood, said to me, "He said, well, I'm live both in Ohio and Florida, and I vote in both states." And I thought, this is not right.
Really?
And I
did
was
they
tempted
know
to,
that that was illegal?
Sure, sure. He said, well, I own property in both places. I should be able to cast a vote and influence policy in both places. And it I think, was a testimony to the lack of checking of the registration rolls, because he was registered to drive in Florida. He wanted to establish his residence in Florida because he didn't want to pay income tax.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, all of this he revealed to me. He was very proud
Jeez.
Of this, not realizing that I was a political scientist. kind of think, well, wait a minute, this isn't really quite right. So there may be a few voters like that. I don't really think there are very many. Most people are playing by the rules, and if they move, and even if they never change their registration or at least say to the authorities in Ohio, I'm no longer an Ohio resident, and why should they do that? That's just another thing you have to do or should do, but you don't have to. So I think it happens very rarely, but occasionally it does happen.
An email from Donna, she says, I wonder how many Ohioans don't register to vote because they don't want to be called for jury duty. Any thoughts? And why is voter registration linked to jury duty?
You know, I don't know the full history of that. I guess I certainly understand the sentiment, but I guess I would say being a citizen of a democracy is not just a privilege, but a responsibility. And I think we have an obligation to participate in multiple ways. One way is to be a citizen, to vote, because that's how we run our own country. It's self-rule. And I think jury duty is also a responsibility. I know it's a can be a burden, but thank goodness we have the jury system. And boy, I'd hate for most Americans to have the attitude, well, somebody else should fill that duty, not me.
Hmm.
I would add that I've lived in too many states to be able to get this straight, but I think in Ohio, the roles that are used for jury duty include people who also have a driver's license.
Yeah.
And so you can't avoid it just by not registering to vote. Now, in some states, it's only based on the registrants, people who have registered to vote, and that was true in Florida. But in other states, I think they try to get other lists to include everybody. But again, I like Ned, I can understand people saying, oh, I never want to serve on a jury, though it's an interesting thing to do.
I would love to serve on a jury. I can't get on one.
I've never been called. My
I've
wife
been
has been
twice.
Called four times,
yeah.
Twice for serial murder trials.
Wow.
So she thinks they have her number.
Yeah, I've been called twice, and both times, you know, I never got seated. And people told me off the record, well, you never will. I guess it's called an opinion leader or something
yes.
like that. Yeah. The Kavanaugh Supreme Court nomination controversy was credited for lighting the fire in the Republican base, unexpectedly in a way. Now that he's safely on the court, any sense about how the GOP, keeps that fire burning or what? Do you think there might be a fall off from there?
Well, I don't know. It remains to be seen.
We'll know
on November 6th.
Yes.
But what's interesting about the discussion of that in the media is that the Democrats had this enthusiasm advantage going into the Kavanaugh hearings. The Republicans, it appears, have closed that advantage. So they're up a bit, but they're only up to the level where the Democrats were. Democrats highly enthusiastic. The figure I saw was, I think, 80%. Of people who call themselves Democrats said, I'm going to vote in November. And a month ago, it was only 60% among Republicans. These things can tend to wane pretty quickly. There may be things that will further energize Republicans. There may be things that will further energize Democrats. We tend to forget, I think, how much things can change even in 30 days, which
right.
is about all we have between now and the election. And
right.
they certainly have changed a lot in the last 30 days.
Yeah.
And it also, again, from the law perspective, it does make you be concerned about how precarious the outcome is. It depends on that degree of mood swings, if you will, but in the public. The ideal conception of a democracy is that we vote, again, out of a sense of responsibility. This is our trust that we've inherited from our forebears, and we pass it on to our great-grandchildren. And out of duty, we have to take care of it as custodians. And that should mean that you should want your views to be in the mix, regardless of what the particular mood at the moment it might happen to be.
And I should add that I've been a big fan of same-day registration. And the reason is that political campaigns heat up in the last 30 days. And you can imagine the Ohio voter who is very upset about the Kavanaugh hearings, one way or another, Democrat or Republican, who waits until the day after tomorrow to try to register. And, of course, it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is the last day to register to vote in the state of Ohio. Ann in Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Several years ago, there was a local election, and I was not registered as a Republican, so I was unable to vote against the person that I hoped to vote against. Now, how is that? I'm still an independent, but if I'm not going to be able to vote on any part of this election, I will try to zip down and change my party. Or become one.
Well, I mean, this is the general election coming up. The primary's already passed. You do in Ohio, you do have to be registered as a Republican or a Democrat to vote in a primary.
Correct.
In either primary. I'm an independent. I've never voted in a primary in Ohio. I accept that as a journalist.
That's same with me. I'm an independent and can't participate in a primary, but can certainly participate in the general and even in a primary with respect to the issues on the ballot that aren't party specific.
Yeah, you just can't vote for candidates
exactly.
in a party.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there shouldn't be any problem with this election participating as an independent.
Yes, anybody who is registered, whether they're not affiliated with a party or affiliated with a party, can vote in the general election. In the primaries, it turns out that if you show up at the polls and you're not affiliated with a party – and you say to the poll watchers there, the judges there, I want to vote in the Democratic primary. You will be typically permitted to do that. But then that becomes a record. You then are affiliated with that party. Now, you can change it, but you can still, if you really feel strongly about it and want to vote in one of the party's primaries, you can still do it in Ohio.
Well, Ned Foley, we have to say goodbye to you. I appreciate your time so much today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Ned Foley, professor and director of the Election Law Center at Ohio State's Moritz College of Law. We'll continue our conversation. We're going to hear from people from different factions and what they're doing to get out their vote. So stay with us and tell us what you're doing to get out the vote. Is this something that matters to you? Have you been out there working to get people to register, working to make sure they make it to the ballot box or early vote? Give us a call and tell us what you're doing. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Tomorrow is the last day to register to vote in Ohio for the midterm election on November 6. Every statewide executive elective office is up for grabs. Democrat Sherrod Brown is running for re-election to the U.S. Senate. His challenger is Republican Congressman Jim Renacci. Over the next 24 hours, the focus is on registration for some groups, and then the final month is focused on getting out the vote. Listeners, the Ohio Republican Party declined our offer to have a representative on the show today. We We asked for anybody, and they wouldn't do it. So if you have been working on getting out the vote for the Republican Party and want to talk about what you've been doing, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Still with us is OSU political scientist Paul Beck, and joining us now, the deputy director of the Ohio Student Association, Kevin O'Donnell. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
And the district director in Ohio's 12th Congressional District for Progressive Turnout PAC, Ernest Bailey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
The 12th Congressional District was quite the race. People were paying a lot of attention back in August when it was kind of the only thing on the ballot. It was a special election. Yeah. Republican Troy Balderson won that election for the 12th over Democrat Danny O'Connor, but it was close. So how does the strategy change for the rematch to fill the seat in the next term on November 6th?
So I wouldn't say that the strategy changes very much. My perception is that our program is really our program is really focused on direct voter-to-voter contact. We have knocked over 93,000 doors so far since our program began in the beginning of June. We've contacted over 11,000 voters. We've collected over 6,000 commitments to vote from voters. And so we're going to continue to work that program, doing direct voter-to-voter contact. We don't spend our money on, campaign literature or TV ads. We spend our money sending people out to talk to voters.
And what about you, Kevin O'Donnell? I know I read that particularly students respond to that voter-to-voter contact.
Right, and especially respond when there is a reason for them to come out to vote. So back in 2016 and earlier years, there was a lot of activity that was around registering to vote for the sake of registering to vote, and often that activity missed the why. And so for us, we really try to go back to that why with students. So what is it that's on this upcoming ballot that is going to impact you? What's at stake? How does voting play into the larger project of building political power so that we can get the things that we need for our communities?
Well, so what kind of messages are you giving them on that score?
Sure. So right now, the big thing for us is criminal justice reform and addressing the opioid epidemic. So we're part of a coalition of groups that has been working on issue one that you might have heard of that reclassifies low-level drug possession felonies and invests the savings into rehabilitation programs. And this is the second worst state in the country for overdose deaths and the fourth worst for the number of people who are incarcerated for low-level drug offenses. And a lot of the people, and even though we don't talk about it, a lot of young people are impacted by both of those issues. And so for us, we begin from that place of here's what's going on, here's what's at stake, and also making it a two-way conversation of how have these issues impacted you. So not just doing the lecturing people on why you got to vote, but listening to them and hearing the stories that are out there.
Paul Beck, you've taught for many years. You know young voters and how they think. Do you think these strategies make sense?
Oh, I think they do. There's a lot of research on what motivates people either to donate to charities or to vote in elections, turn out and vote in elections. And the key is direct contact. What we political scientists and campaigners call the ground game, where you're knocking on doors, you're encountering people in shopping malls, you're doing a variety of other things. And the most effective work is when you're contacted by somebody either that you know who can say, hey, people like us are voting Republican or voting Democrat this year, or people who are like you. Mm-hmm. So it's best, for example, with students, for other students to contact them. And those contacts can be pretty effective. And they're particularly useful, I think, not so much over the summer when students typically are scattered. They're back in their homes, and so they're scattered around the state of Ohio or elsewhere. But it's particularly effective when they are concentrated on a college campus because they're easy to target there, and you can kind of work your way through the dorms or the apartment buildings and both register people to vote. And then registration's not enough.
Yeah.
Once they're registered, you need to hound them to make sure that they're going to vote. And obviously, vote as early as possible so you can kind of get them off your list and turn your attention to somebody else.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. With this hour, we're talking about getting out the vote. Starts with registration. Registration deadline in Ohio is tomorrow, October 9th, for the November 6th. Midterm elections. It's an important year. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I have Kevin O'Donnell here from the Ohio Student Association and Ernest Bailey. He's from the Ohio's 12th Congressional District for Progressive Turnout PAC. They're both talking about how they're getting out the vote. Also with us, OSU political scientist Paul Beck. 614-292-8513 is the number to call to tell us what you're doing to get out the vote, how you're maybe you're somebody who does lit drops. So whatever it is that you're doing, tell us. 614-292-8513. And Janet in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
So one of the things that attracted my family to get out and help was in the primary season, we got this postcard from one of our neighbors for Danny O'Connor. And it wasn't just your everyday piece of mail. It was all colorful and arty. It really attracted our attention among all the other junk mail. So as a result of that, we ended up going door-to-door for Danny a bunch of times before the primary. And then the other thing that is going to go on tomorrow at the Oval at OSU is we're going to be out there registering voters. So there's a big effort by the Ohio Democratic Party to be on the Oval, all around campus, all day. A lot of these students don't live here. They come from different places from around the country. And we think a lot of them will want to sign up and register and, get their vote out there for the person who they think's best.
Well, Janet, now that I hear your voice, I recognize it. I haven't heard from you in a while. Thanks for giving us a call, Janet in Clintonville. That postcard thing is a thing. I've gotten some postcards in the mail, and I'm an independent voter, so I don't get a lot of the stuff that a lot of people do because I'm not affiliated with one party over the other. But that personal touch where somebody actually has sat down and written a postcard to me from like another state, like Washington State or something. Is that a big deal to you, Ernest Bailey?
Yeah, very, very, very much so. The personal touch is extremely important. We have many decades of research to prove that these kind of impersonalized kind of mass mailers, especially partisan mass mailers, are not effective at turning out voters. On the other hand, if you have sort of direct voter-to-voter contact, whether it's, by them writing you a note or not, is way more effective.
Yeah. And what about you guys over, Kevin O'Donnell, at Ohio Student Association?
Yeah, it's kind of similar to a program that we're building called our Friends and Family Program, where we get together on Monday nights and open up our phone contact list and go through and text the people who we think would be vaguely interested in the issue that we're working on at the time, or people who we think that might have let their registration lapse, because that often happens, especially with students. It's very much in line with a lot of the tactics we use.
And Kevin mentioned texting, which is different, right, Paul? I mean, technology has changed the waterfront a lot.
It sure has. You want to reach out to voters however they get information. And texting can be effective. Phone calls can be effective. Door to door. One of the candidates' fathers knocked on my door the other day, and that was pretty impressive, actually. So again, it's these personal contacts through whatever means somebody does their personal business.
But I don't pick up the phone if I don't know the number when it's at home.
But you might respond to a text or at least read it.
Right. That's the difference. Faye in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Faye. You're an OSU student. Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just had a question. I'm an Ohio State student, and I just had a question about the Get Out the Vote efforts.
Yeah.
I've been hearing about them a lot more than I've been seeing, really people coming up to me and asking me whether or not I'm registered to vote. I am currently registered to vote, but a lot of my friends are not. And even if they are, they're not really sure on how to vote on this particular issue. They just know that they should be voting for the Democrats or the Republicans.
Yeah.
So I just had a question about that. So how can we get more college students aware of the issues that may be that are most pressing for them?
Well, Kevin O'Donnell, I'll let you take that one.
Sure.
You're progressive, however. Well, no, you're not. You're non-denominational.
Non-denominational, right? But we definitely have a North Star and a set of values. But I almost want to turn that question back to you, Faye, of what are the when you go throughout your day, what are the moments when you are the most, when your ears are, and eyes are the most open, when you're most...
So, Faye, what moves you?
So I am, I'm a young person, so I vote on issues that will be affecting my future. I'm also a I'm a child of immigrants, so I vote on I vote for candidates that are pro-immigration, pro-refugees. I am also a Black woman, and I care very much about mass incarceration, so I vote on candidates who have similar views to me in that way. But a lot of my friends, like I said before, don't really know what is the most important to them. So they just know that they should be voting for a Democrat or a Republican,
yeah,
and not so much on what the particular candidate's views are.
I mean, Paul, back, how much have we fallen back on knee-jerk responses at the ballot box? We still vote all one party.
I think a lot. We are a nation of tribes. Two prominent tribes in the political world, Democrats and Republicans. Republicans voted around 90% for Trump in 2018. Democrats voted around 90% for Clinton in 2016, I mean. Mm-hmm. 90% for Clinton in 2016. It's hard to uproot them from those kinds of feelings. You even saw it in the Kavanaugh hearings, that Republicans thought the Kavanaugh was okay. Democrats thought that he wasn't okay, and there just was a clear divide there. Now, there are a lot of Americans who are neither Democrats nor Republicans.
Most people are independents.
That's right. That's right. And that will spell the difference, I think, what they do in 2018 between a Democratic House of Representatives and a continuation of a Republican House of Representatives.
Have you found that the Kavanaugh hearings have popped up in conversations with, you know, with progressives for you, Ernest Bailey?
Yeah, that's one of the joys of knocking as many doors as we have. You know, whatever's on people's minds, that's what they're talking about at the doors. And so we have the opportunity to then provide the connective tissue between the issues that they care about and participating in democracy.
So does that take the form of someone shows up at my door, I'm a I oppose the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh, and the connective tissue is where you're saying, well, then if you feel that way, then these are the candidates that you would be interested in. These are the issues that would matter to you.
So we're a non-candidate specific program. We have a generalized Democratic platform. So we talk a lot about bread and butter Democratic issues, things like protection of Social Security and other safety net programs.
And you have to be very careful about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Ernest Bailey, we have to say goodbye to you. I really appreciate you coming in, though. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Ernest Bailey, he's district director in Ohio's 12th Congressional District for Progressive Turnout PAC. Still with us will be Kevin O'Donnell, deputy director of the Ohio Student Association, and Ohio State political scientist Paul Beck. Faye, thanks for your call. Just get your friends to register, first of all. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Tomorrow is the last day to register to vote in Ohio for the November 6th midterm election. A variety of groups have been working to first get people registered to vote. And that deadline, again, is tomorrow. Then they need to get the voters to the polls. That's what we're talking about today. Still with us is OSU political scientist Paul Beck, also deputy director of the Ohio Student Association, Kevin O'Donnell. And joining us now is Michael Sweeney, the outreach coordinator for Libertarian Travis Irvine's gubernatorial campaign. Welcome to the show, Michael Sweeney.
Thanks for the invite.
Michael, who is your voter base? Who are you targeting to get out the vote?
Well, on the simplest level, it's libertarians. As a perennial underdog, we've not had a great opportunity to be represented both through primary and electoral forces. Some shenanigans, of course, have gone into that. It's a longer story than we get into here. So we're actually finding ourselves open. Pretty much our philosophies we don't really find a need to convince or persuade. Many Ohioans already agree with our positions and are either just unaware or just have not found themselves particularly dissatisfied with their current positions or current choices. When we do outreach and we tell them, hey, there's more to it than what you're being told, they're always surprised and they're always pleased.
How do you contact them? How do you reach them?
Most recently, we started doing peer-to-peer texting. A lot of the platforms are very expensive or difficult to use, difficult for training. So we rolled our own, and we created our own homegrown outreach platform to use, and we've been using it quite successfully. We just did, over the course of 2 weeks, about 4 days worth of real work, and contacted about 11,000 primarily L-friendly, libertarian-friendly people that we did opted in. And let them know that there had been debate exclusion. Travis Irvine had been left off the debates for the governors. And they were concerned to hear that, and they wanted to learn more.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's a real building block situation at where you're at right now. I mean, you need to raise money to reach voters, to get the numbers, to get the candidate into the debates, right?
Right. It can be a virtuous circle, as it were. Mm-hmm. You get the word out. People hear about you. They want to get involved. They learn about more choices, and they realize that so much of what they thought they knew is only part of the puzzle, or maybe not wrong altogether. And that's how we want to approach it, is that, this is outreach on purpose. Get involved. You can't dictate someone's enthusiasm, but you can find out what they're excited about and then find where those similarities lie. And we may not always agree, but the things we do agree on, we will work together.
Paul Beck, we were talking earlier in the program that back in the day, turn of the last century, voter participation was much higher. And back then, there were more parties involved.
It wasn't so much the number of parties.
Okay.
It was the kind of motivation that people had to vote. First, campaigns were much more exciting, believe it or not, than they are today. Most Americans lived in small towns and rural areas. The only real excitement that came to their particular part of the country was during a political campaign or in the summer of the fair. So they were these big campaign rallies. People would come in even before cars from outlying areas to hear candidates debate. You think of the Lincoln-Douglas debates in the 1860s or 1850s and 60s. So it was a different kind of era. There also wasn't television, so you couldn't sit at home and watch the TV or listen to the radio. It drew people in, and the parties were very effective in doing that. One thing I wanted to point out for both Michael and Kevin, they're engaged in efforts that are very difficult. To reach out and contact voters, first you have to have a list to work from. You can't contact probably everybody you would like to contact, and so you will prioritize that list. You want to contact people where you think are going to get the best results. And as I said, this is very, very hard work. And there are a lot of people, and I put myself in that category, who don't want to go door to door knocking on people's doors, confronting them, being shouted at by people who don't like what you have to say. And so I think that it takes a special kind of person, really dedicated
person to be a volunteer and to work hard for their candidate or their particular issue. And again, you can't contact everybody. And mm-hmm. there probably are hidden votes out there that you could realize mm-hmm. if you could just figure out a way to reach out to them. I'm reminded of the 2004 campaign, where the Bush campaign was very effective at reaching out to people who belonged to fundamentalist churches. And in every fundamentalist church in Ohio, on the Sunday before election, there was a notice put on the windshields of all the cars saying, "We are supporting the Bush-Cheney ticket." And I think that was very effective. And it was kind of under the radar. Democrats were crowing about how much they were doing. Mm-hmm. Republicans were pretty quiet about this particular aspect of their campaign, and it worked very effectively.
Well, Republicans are being quiet again because we did ask them to be on the show, have anybody from the Republican Party, the Ohio Republican Party, represented on the show, and they declined our offer, just so people know that. So, Michael Sweeney, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're pretty much going with people who have already identified sympathies with the Libertarian Party, whether or not they're strictly libertarian or not, and that's who you're going after, or that's who you've relied on, is lists you have of those people.
Well, the lists we have now are people who opted in. As a perennial underdog, our fundraising, it lags behind. We weren't allowed to become an official party until about 2 months ago. We weren't allowed to announce any candidates as such. So while everybody else has had a year or more to run up their campaign and get out the word, we've had a very short runway to get this plane off the ground. So we're traveling at
supersonic
speed.
What do you have to
speed.
Get to get on the ballot?
So there were 102,000 signatures collected over the course of 18 months. That accumulates thousands of volunteer hours and $250,000.
Because you can't pay someone to do it. It's volunteers.
Well, there are volunteers. There are paid petitioners, but they have to be very carefully documented.
Yeah.
Through all the cross T's and dotted lowercase J's. So it was a very significant undertaking. And that alone as a significant drain on resources, and a very purposeful tactic by establishment resources who want to make sure that you're not able to effectively communicate and outreach. So our lists are those who opted in and those who have told us they want to hear from us. And then we go from there and we say, who else can we contact? Who else is in your phone tree, your contact book, your address book? We really do feel that the undecided voter, when you have over 50% of the American public not voting, choosing to abstain, setting out, we find ourselves, as the Cleveland Plain Dealer has said, we're all Travis Irvine, on the outside, looking in, wondering, what are they bickering about? What's the fix? How do we find a solution? Can we work together? Can we even get them to shake hands? So we are looking for everyone. If you're, firmly red or firmly blue, we'll, put the olive branch out there and say, hey, we want to work together. But if you're already decided, I'm not trying to convince you. We're just trying to find the people who haven't heard yet.
Mm-hmm. And, Kevin O'Donnell, we know that you're shooting for students by and large, right?
Correct.
Michael Sweeney was saying, you were nodding. You're just like, yeah, I mean, people. He talked about connective tissue, or maybe it was, from before, but do you spend a lot of time doing that?
Yeah, I really resonated with what you said. I feel like most people are in this sphere of, I have a set of things that I do care about, but I'm not sure how the political system actually addresses them. It seems like ideas just go into the political system and then either die or become corrupted.
The meat grinder.
Yeah, it's a meat grinder where good ideas go to die. And so for us, the connective tissue is the end game at the end of the day. In our chapter meetings, Monday nights at the Summit Church next to campus, we typically spend the first part of it having people just talk to each other about what brought them into the room, what are the issues that they care about, and kind of finding the areas of that Venn diagram that overlap. I think a lot of the folks who get involved in OSA might have tried out getting involved in one of the major parties and didn't find the same kind of place for that connective tissue. So I think it's really important to be having these spaces that are not just about turning people out or getting someone elected or getting a ballot passed, but about building community around what we care about.
Yeah.
Paul Beck?
Well, politics can be very frustrating to people, and it turns a lot of people off. They hear the shouting back and forth. They don't particularly like what they're hearing. And you can imagine people saying, no, I don't want any part of that. So when an ad comes on the TV, they hit the remote and shut it off, basically. And there are a lot of Americans that way. And I think we understand that. We understand how politics, again, can be a very frustrating game for people. In the democracies around the world, by the way, that are more established, turnout has been going down. And part of the reason for that is that I think the debates, the conflicts are kind of old hat to people. They've heard all of this before. They're not really encouraged to turn out in elections. And then you see in recent years in this country as well as other European or European countries, a rise in populist candidates, candidates who are anti-establishment, anti-elite, who are generating a pretty good share of the electorate in some of these countries. And this is a reaction to politics as it was or as it is in those countries. And again, it's, you know, I think the voice of apathy in a way, but now this apathy rises to the level of participation in elections.
I can agree with that. I think many voters find themselves overwhelmed by the messages that they're getting. It is projected, it is presented to them as divisive, again, with simple, you know, tit for tat, you know, and bickering. And why do you want to get involved with that? If you see two people arguing in an aisle in the store, you don't walk over and say, hey, what are you talking about? You tend to back away. And I think that as we try and engage voters and we try and bring them out, we want to say, hey, we're not here to argue with you. We want to hear what's important to you and get that done.
You know, I know that negative ads have always been around. We like to think that this is something like a 20th century or 21st century phenomenon, and it surely isn't. I mean, it was as vitriolic as it could get. Even when the country was being formed, politics was vitriolic. But the because of the technology, we're bombarded by negative ads in a way that we weren't 150 years ago. So, Paul, Beck, does that – does negative advertising get people out or does it suppress?
It does two things. It turns people off.
Okay.
People don't like negative advertising, but the evidence is pretty clear that people remember negative ads better than they remember positive ads. Mm-hmm. And that for people who are more or less on the fence, a negative ad can really make the difference. And what's interesting to me, and we talked about this a few days ago on your show, is that the so-called dark money advertising, these are ads that are done by people who can't really be identified as to who they are. The dark money ads are much more negative than the candidate ads. And the reason is that the candidates have to vouch for their own ads.
They're not really inclined
to want to identify themselves with an ad that is negative. So they will let an ally of theirs do that. And it's, I think, another reason that many people are turned off from politics these days.
Do you guys hear that out when you're talking to people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you got a chance to see the Mike DeWine ad that came out after the debate. But basically what he did was used Cordray's support for issue one as a tool to bash him over the head with, kind of repeating this now debunked line about the impact that it would have on certain drug classifications. And so when we were going around and talking to people the next day, people are like, I heard this and got some robocall saying the same thing. What's up with that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it does reach people.
It does change the conversation.
What gets repeated becomes reality.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons why filmmakers are so careful about doing timepieces where you get Titanic and James Cameron was agonizing on the details because he knew that once people saw that movie, that was it. That was cemented in their brain what happened, what it looked like, how those people acted. So when you have political ads that are repeating the same thing over and over again, we're inclined to say, I don't want to deal with that. But then we remember it. It's a marketing jingle at that point.
It sticks. Well, Michael Sweeney, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Michael Sweeney is the outreach coordinator for the Irvine for Governor campaign, Libertarian. Kevin O'Donnell, deputy director of the Ohio Student Association, thanks to you as well. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me.
And Paul Beck, as always, Ohio State political scientist, thanks for joining me again.
Good to be here, Ann. Still a political scientist.
Don't forget, tomorrow is the deadline to register to vote. October 9th, 2018, for the November 6th midterm elections. Don't forget, and thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.